questions that may be asked on one section could be answered in the other. So we'd like to do the whole presentation, but I think it's a good idea to segment the discussion.
The floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. You have before you quite a bulky document of 50-odd pages, and we've been requested to brief the committee on incubators supported by the departments, on gazelles, on network facilitators and service providers working with the department in support of operatives and enterprises and their developmental status and impact on job creation. To say, so there are four elements to the presentation. The first, Lindor will do the first two sections on enterprise, the enterprise incubation program, and on the Black Business Supplier Development Program and network facilitators. I wish to point out that in the Enterprise Incubation Program, the EIP, we do not use any intermediaries. So there's all of these programs have different models. The Black Business Supply Development Program does use network facilitators. Jeff, I assume, will talk to the cooperatives, and we will talk to the cooperatives incentive scheme where there are service providers. And then the CEO of CEDA will introduce the manager dealing with the gazelles, and gazelles really just has had one service provider, which was in TIA. So I'll hand over to Lindor immediately, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. I will present on the two programs, as DG has said. I'll start with the EIP, which is our Enterprise Incubation Program. The outline is there for on the issues that I'm going to cover, and then I'll follow with the BBSDP and network facilitators. We thought we should just give a brief background on the EIP, which is a new program that we introduced in 2016-17 financial year. After the challenges we had with the IST program, which remained with the DTI. Currently in the country there are 129 private and public funded incubators, and out of these 80 are EIP and STP incubators, which are with CEDA, or CEDA Technology Program, which is with CEDA, which have benefited 3,690 clients, and in the process created 2,592 new jobs in the past financial year. The EIP, it was conceived with one main thing that resulted in us coming up with the EIP program, was the issue of market access, because we had looked at the gap that is there in the market, where enterprises, the incubators are trained, but there is no market access for them after the training. So we thought we should center this new program around access to market. Also, on the next slide, Chair, on page 6, we thought we should also give a background on the concept of the incubator. What is an incubator? And to us, incubator is more of an organization that provides or facilitates and provides a protected environment for new and early stage or existing businesses by offering comprehensive range of shared and enterprise development assistance options, which may include businesses in a cluster setup and including cooperatives. So it's more of an environment where enterprises can be nurtured, empowered, so that they are able to go out and do business on their own. In terms of the cooperatives, the International Cooperative Alliance, they define a cooperative as an autonomous association of personnel united voluntarily to meet the common economic, social, and cultural needs and aspirations through a jointly owned and democratically controlled enterprise. Because we've also moved to accommodate, because previously cooperatives were not accommodated in the incubators. The focus was mostly on the SMMEs and micro enterprises. So in this new format, we are emphasizing on the cooperatives to be part of the incubation process. They are in various sectors, which is manufacturing, ICT, and agriculture. And then on the next slide, Chair, we thought we should also differentiate in terms of what is an incubator, because sometimes other people, they have training programs that they call incubators, but you find that they just provide training, so which is not incubation. But incubator is more focused programs to support new startups. It's management team on site. They are part of the program. They get essential expertise to resolve early stage threats. We carefully select new startups during a pre-incubation process because it's critical to get people who are willing to be part of the incubation process, because you end up with the people who are not really dedicated to the process. Others, they pull out during the process. So it's critical that we go through the pre-incubation process. We select the people, the right people who are going to be able to stay for the whole program. The incubated SMMEs, the main objective is to make sure that we have SMMEs that are self-sustaining and are independent post the incubation process. We also set time period for incubator to graduate and exit the incubator, because it's critical that as they exit, we also get new people on board and incubate them. What is not an incubator is when a person is just coming, getting training, and then they're getting out. You know, they get this interrupted service provision, so that is not an incubator. So we thought we should just differentiate these two, because sometimes there is that confusion where we thought that we think an incubator is something which is just purely a training program and call it an incubator. And then just to go deeper on to the elements of the EIP program in particular, like I said, it's centered around market access. We thought for the pilot, because we were introducing this new concept, it should be 100% funded by government, and then after we'll start looking at the cost sharing with the incubators. It provides the business development support, exit and graduation. Once the enterprise is incubated, they are empowered with technical know-how so that they can respond to the supply chain requirements of the private sector entities, and they are also assisted and encouraged to approach additional markets and financiers. In terms of the funding, the funding is kept at a minimum of 5 million to a maximum of 10 million rand, VAT inclusive per financial year for a 3-year period, and subject to the availability of funds indeed. Monitoring and evaluation, which is one of the critical things we are emphasizing upon as a department going forward. For us, it's critical that we do M&E so that we are able to count and see the impact of the initiative or of the investment that we put into this incubator. So there are specific performance indicators that determine the performance, quarterly reporting from incubators, which is also accompanied by site visits by the officials of the department to check what is on the report, whether it's true, inclusive feedback mechanism to monitor feedback from the incubated enterprises and as well as cooperatives, and then a system to monitor and track the performance of enterprises and cooperatives once incubation ends. So the issue of aftercare is also quite critical for us as part of this program, so that we know how these enterprises are performing post the incubation period. The next slide, Chair, is talking about the budget for the first financial year. In fact, overall, we're giving 150 million by National Treasury over the MTF period. 2016-17, the target was 7, and we were able to get 7 incubators on board. And then we had a budget of 46 million. We spent 20 million, but we were able to get a rollover because National Treasury also understood that this was the first time we were introducing the program, so we couldn't, and we were not willing to just give people money just to exhaust the budget. We were looking at the performance of these incubators. So that's why you can see that for the 2017-18 financial year, We had a budget of 49, but we spent 70 because we had that additional budget that was rolled over from the previous year's financial period. And then 2018-19 for this new financial year, we have 54 million that we need to spend. And then on the next slide, Chair, we just presenting the incubators that we approved for the 2016-17. We have the, you'll see that we have two or three incubators that are in the agricultural sector, one in construction, the other one in creative industry, and the other one which is in automotive manufacturing. You'll see that it's a mixture of, the incubators, it's a mixture of cooperatives as well as SMEs. And then on the next slide, Chair, we're presenting the 2017-18 approved incubators. Again, you'll see that it's three agriculture. Out of the nine, it's three agriculture. And then we have one in steel, one in IT, the services, as well as another one in which is doing with different sectors. You'll see also there are some cooperatives that are part of the incubators, as well as SMEs. You'll also see that they are spread in different provinces, but you'll see that the majority is those that are in Gauteng. And then on the next slide, Chair, because the incubation is normally a three-year process, we're just presenting there that the real impact is something that we measure, especially post the incubation period, when the entities are already operational and they are producing the goods or services that they said they were going to produce. But in total, Chair, the program is supporting more than 220 SMEs and cooperatives, and we envisage that the supported beneficiaries will create in excess of 454 jobs. This will impact the communities where these entities are operating in terms of alleviating poverty and unemployment. 90% of the beneficiaries are based in the rural and township areas. We try to make sure that we emphasize or prioritize those applications that are from enterprises that are coming from rural and township areas, so that we know we don't just get incubators that are centered in urban areas. Chair, on the next slide, we also thought we should also present on the incubators that we are not happy about in terms of performance. Others, there were some delays in terms of the starting up the incubator or spending the resources that were given to them because of one or two challenges. For example, the Limpopo Wildlife Business Incubator, there was low implementation because the contracting of the demo farms where the incubators were supposed to operate in, there were delays. Sibanye Gold, we had a challenge there at in Innovation Africa because, as we said, the incubators or EIP is centered around the securement of market access, and Sibanye Gold, which was going to provide the market for these incubators, pulled out. Still best, there were challenges here with the implementation of this project, inability of key service providers to deliver infrastructure on time, which resulted in them not complying with the implementation plan. Remedial action is the issue of us being able to detect early warnings and also, you know, if necessary, withhold the funding until they are able to perform. We're also trying to make sure that there should be some sort of a cutoff period for those incubators who are not performing so that they know upfront that if they delay delivering on the implementation plan, there are consequences. Some of the incubators, they had to forfeit their some of the tranche payments because of them not being able, because they're also not able to go back to National Treasury for the second time, telling them that can they roll over the funding. Some of the challenges, it's non-compliance, non-adherence to project implementation plan, lack of early warning system, which are things that we've picked up, and we are addressing them in terms of ensuring that we have strong M&E, we address and we deal with the issues that needs to be dealt with, as well as some of the capacity challenges that we had within the department. Chair, I'll move to the next program, which is BBSDP and Network Facilitators. And then on the first slide, there's slide 17, which is explaining or describing what the program is, which is a cost-sharing grant between us as government and the SMME to improve their competitiveness and sustainability. So it's focusing on existing enterprises that want to expand their operations. The maximum amount is 1 million. Of which 800,000 should go to tools, machinery, and equipment, and then the 200,000 goes to business development service, which includes training around governance issues, marketing, productivity, management, and use of modern technology. We emphasize that these enterprises must be 51% black-owned and also have management that is predominantly black. Also, one of the qualifying criteria is the entity must be in operation for 1 year and have a turnover of between 250,000 and 35 million. Then the other issue, Chair, that we thought we should present on the next slide is the issue of network facilitators, which are people or individuals who assist this enterprise in compiling the proposals to us, and they also ensure the delivery of projects that have been approved under BBSD. They are classified as independent contractors. They don't have a contract where they need to get income from us. So there is that independent contractor relationship between us and them. We expect them to be honest brokers between us and the enterprises applying for funding under the program. Network facilitators are rewarded for certain services rendered, but there is no relationship of employment, agency, or representation established between the department and us as a department, between the department and the network facilitators. On the next slide, Chair, we're just going back to the rationale of why we're using these network facilitators in the first place. We discovered that around 2010, when we were still part of the DTI, there were a number of organizations that were going around representing themselves as facilitators of the incentives, and they were operating on an informal basis, and they were not accountable to anyone. So at the time, DTI decided that, no, let's formalize this relationship so that we can be able to hold them accountable and make sure that we vet them and accredit them. So there is a formal application process that they went through to check their qualifications, to check who they are, what they know. It was open nationally, and the selection process targeted black-owned enterprises. Also, this intervention was also seen as an attempt to reduce the time and cost that the entity spends in accessing finance. So it was also an intervention to assist the SMMEs to reduce the time and cost of putting together an application and ensuring that they comply with whatever requirements that are contained in the guidelines. The next chair, on the next page, the role of the network facilitator is to assist these entities to put together the application, compile the company profile, company diagnostic, which is very critical so that when we intervene, we really address the problems or we assist these entities with the appropriate service or intervention, ensure that there is compliance with the requirements of the BBSDP quality, delivery of BBSDP project. They are also expected to assist if there is any form of corruption or fraud that is detected. Network facilitators are expected to provide information. If they also suspect any corruption or fraud, they must report to us as a department. Also, they assist in identifying service providers together with the entities so that these entities can get the service or the equipment or machinery that they have applied for. They also assist in ensuring that the codes that are supplied to us are of the same level in terms of quality services to be rendered. On the next slide, in terms of the payment of the network facilitators, for projects that are less than 75,000, a facilitation fee of 10% of the project is paid on success. So it's not about them just getting being paid for submitting an application, but if the application is approved by the adjudication committee, they get 10% of the facilitation fee of the total cost of the project that is approved. a facilitation fee of 10,000 would be payable for applications equal or exceeding 75,000 but less than 130,000, plus 20% of the difference between 130,000 and 75,000. So the maximum that they can go up to is 21,000. And then the payment of this network facilitator is part of the approved amount. So it's not an additional amount that is beyond the amount that is approved per project. Network facilitators are only paid on approval. And the second and final fee is paid once the enterprise has performed and the service or equipment has been delivered to the enterprise, and this has been checked and verified that indeed we have delivered on the project. Then on the next slide, Chair, we're just presenting the example of what we paid for 2017-18 to network facilitators. We're listing there the network facilitators per province, the number of payments that have been made to these network facilitators, which is relative to the number of projects that have been approved. So you see that we paid a total of 8 million to 57 network facilitators in 2017-18. Then, Chair, we also did a comparative analysis on the payments to network facilitators relative to the budget of BBSDP. The budget for 2016-17 was 267 million, and we paid 10 million to network facilitators, which is a 4% of the budget. And then for 2017-18, we had a budget of 256 million. We paid 8.6 million, which is 3% of the total budget. And then on the next slide, Chair, we are in the process of doing a very same exercise that was done for the 400 cooperatives last year. We, in fact, for 2015-16, colleagues are busy compiling a report because we wanted to go back and check, you know, the status of this, and it's a good time because at least they've been operating after our intervention for a period of almost 2 years. So it's a good time to go back and check where they are. So we will be done by the end of this month in terms of the report, and then for the 2016-17, we will commence with that exercise thereafter. So, Chair, just for you to know that it's around 600 enterprises that we are assessing. We'll also point out those successful beneficiaries. We thought we should just highlight a few, even though the project, the report is not complete, but there are a few that we thought we should just bring to your attention. This one project, which is the Chimeha Projects and Training, which is 60%. Male-owned and 40% female-owned. Those are the interventions, the things that we bought as a department for this entity. They are involved in construction. They are employing around about 35 people from 7 that they used to employ before our intervention, and their turnover has grown to around 150 million per year. So those are some of the equipments that we brought, and some of those cars, it's things that they have been able to buy or to expand after the intervention of BBSDP, which was an investment of 650,000 in 2016. Then on the next one is another example of the well-performing beneficiary, which is involved in the petrochemical sector. They are based in Free State. They've created new jobs. The turnover, for example, has increased from 250 to 432. This is one of the black-owned enterprises that is involved in this sector. It's one of those that we really think we should handhold and assist them to grow even further. So it's some of the equipment that we procured as a department so that they can use it to process used oil for selling to construction and other motor vehicle producing companies. Then on the next one, Chair, it's one of the entities that is female-owned. It's in Durban. Their turnover has grew by 40% after intervention, and they've been able to employ, move from 8 to 21 people. The investment that we made there is 222,000. In 2016, we bought all those kind of equipment to assist them to move to the next level. And then, Chair, on the next one is another one that is based in a city deep in Johannesburg. We bought equipment, the weighbridge and software for 352,000. They are making an additional income of 80,000. And then they've been able to employ 11 people directly after the intervention made by the department. The last example, Chair, is this industrial cleaning services, which is female-owned. They are able to get a turnover of 270,000 per month, and the company now directly employs in total of 21 direct staff on the project. But Chair, we'll be able to come back again once the report is finalized and present a more detailed report on all the beneficiaries, especially 2015-16 beneficiaries, so that the PC can get a full picture of the impact of the intervention. Chair, we thought we should also highlight that there are challenges. We can talk about the good stories, but there are challenges that are there. The issues around the monitoring, I think we've indicated to the portfolio committee that currently in the department we have two people who are doing M&E. For this project, for example, we had to borrow people from other units to go and assist with the assessing development impact of the project. It's something that we are addressing as a department. You'll see that in the structure that is there, the M&E is at the chief directorate level, and we are pushing, discussing with National Treasury that we need to get resources for people to occupy that unit and ensure that they go and look at the impact of the interventions. Chair, for because of budget limitations, this current financial year, which is 2018-19, we did not open for new applications because we want to address the backlog that we had, because it's unfair that we can take new applications when we have not adjudicated on all the projects that we've received. We must also indicate that it's not all rosy, the report that we are getting from colleagues who are doing the M&E. Some companies or beneficiaries have closed down because of challenges within those sectors. Some are not getting good business, for example, in construction, so they had to close down. There are also instances or allegations of corruption or collusion between some of the officials with the network facilitators, resulting in inflated quotations being paid out, and there is Auditor General, which is really assisting us with the forensic investigation in this respect, and we are expecting them to finalize the project in the next 2 to 3 months. Also, there have been some audit findings which resulted in us removing certain network facilitators because they are not doing what they were supposed to do. We had to blacklist them. They are no longer having any relationship with us. We don't get or entertain getting applications from them because they've shown themselves to be fraudulent. Chair, even though we did a comparative analysis in terms of the money that goes to beneficiaries vis-a-vis the money that is paid to network facilitators, you'll see that in one of the slides we said we spent 10 million on network facilitators out of 256 million budget. We, as a department, we thought that 10 million could go to SMMEs directly instead of going to these network facilitators. So we are really looking at utilizing the infrastructure of CEDA to make sure that they play the role of network facilitators rather than us paying individual companies just to facilitate applications. So we've looked at the cost-benefit analysis, and we'll be working together with CEDA so that all the money, instead of it going to individuals, but money goes to ultimate beneficiaries. Chair, that's all in terms of the two programs. Thank you.
Chair, with your permission, I'll hand over to Chair. Will you put Jeff free in, or will you change seats?
Before Jeff comes in, I think let's, I suggest that we engage the two inputs so that we don't have an oversupply of information. And then after engaging, we can then proceed to invite another input. Where responses happen to be across, you know, the department can so indicate. Let me get a comment from Comrade Bongo.
No, thanks, Chair. I'm just worried about the time. So we may over indulge on one part and not do justice to the other one. So if we take everything, we note everything down, that may assist in terms of time spreading. Yes.
Yeah, Chair, because we indeed have noted and we'll continue noting.
Okay, I'll
Jeff, through DG.
Jeff, Willinder did very well by 15 minutes on his section. Thank you.
Chair, I'll try to keep the standard. If not, to outperform it. Chair, I'm going to talk on the cooperative incentive scheme. The program, CIS, is a 100% grant offered to registered and qualifying cooperatives. It is an incentive that focuses on supporting broadening economic participation by helping cooperative startups and also to make sure that they get into the mainstream economy. The scheme initially was paying from 10,000 to 350. We have now changed it. The scheme has been revised and approved in February 2018 to fund individual primary cooperatives and also cluster cooperatives and secondary cooperatives. It was we anticipate to implement it in July so that we roll out the new scheme. Individual primary cooperatives is defined, I think, as my colleague has said, as a form of cooperatives made up of a group of five or more members whose purpose is to provide service and employment or economic empowerment of members and then also to empower one another. And then a minimum of 400,000 and a maximum grant of 1.5 million can be offered to one cooperative entity. So we have now moved it from a ceiling of 350 to fund up to a maximum of 1.5 million. But there is a minimum that a primary cooperative will be subjected to. It has to meet certain particular tests for it to be able to go to a maximum 1.5 million. And then on the cluster cooperatives is where two or more primary cooperatives have come together and have agglomerated, and they come together to meet the economic needs of each of the primary cooperatives, because that is really targeting to grow the primary cooperatives, even if it is in a cluster format. But we want to see those primary cooperatives within the cluster growing. And the aim is to achieve economies of scale and scope as effective mechanism of growing primary cooperatives. A minimum of 3 million is the grant funding, and the maximum is 11 million that is available to a cluster cooperatives and the secondary cooperatives accordingly. Eligible activities for individual cooperatives are infrastructure, machinery, equipment, commercial vehicles, including we're excluding luxury vehicles and technological improvements, tools for both startups and existing cooperatives. This one is kept at 70% fixed capital investment. And then one activity is that individual cooperatives can be funded include working capital for both startups and existing cooperatives. The working capital, we have kept it at a 30% maximum allowable grant. The incentive of cooperatives management kept at maximum 120,000 for a maximum period of 12 months. Because what we are saying here is that we are prepared to look at, as part of working capital fund management, as a capacity within the cooperative. And then in terms of a period of 12 months, though, it cannot go beyond that. Startup stock is one of the elements that we fund within working capital, rent, electricity payment, water, as well as stipends to cooperative members for a maximum period of 12 months, capped at a maximum of 18,000 per member of the primary cooperative. Eligible activities for cluster cooperatives, also at capped at 70%, is infrastructure, things such as warehouse, silos, machinery, equipment, commercial vehicle, technological improvement and tools are also going to be provided within the fixed capital investment for cluster cooperatives. For cluster funding, 30% of funds may be used for working capital in terms of buying what we call bulk buying of stock, shared services, marketing and logistical services, rent, electricity, water payment, as well as stipend for members of the primary cooperative. During 2005 and 2006 to 2007, the CIS guidelines prescribed that payment must be made directly to cooperatives. That used to be the initial approach that we adopted on CIS, because we said this is a small amount, it was up to a maximum of 350, let's pay it directly to cooperatives. But the outcome was very much a negative one. During the transfer of the cooperative incentive scheme in 2007 from EDD and to TEO, an audit indicated that paying cooperatives directly was too high a risk, because it was found that the cooperative often did not utilize the CIS funding for the intended purpose which they were given that particular month. A forensic report compiled by Price, Water, Coopers and Gabashe Forensic Services to the DTI dated 10 May 2000 indicated that an amount of 2 million out of 4 million funding for the African cooperatives for hawkers and informal businesses was not used according to the budget and the business plan submitted by ACHIP to the TTI. It was also mentioned that national pavilions, the critical infrastructure program and support program for industrial innovation also effect upfront payments to corporate to entities. So it was a sweep, because what we did was to prevent cooperatives not to use the money for the intended purpose. Cooperatives were made to sign cessation forms to allow the DTI to pay service provider directly for goods and services supplied. It became clear that most service providers demanded upfront payments before releasing goods, especially in cases where buggies and tractors were purchased for cooperatives. Meetings were held with finance division in the DTI, who explained that the PFMA did not specifically prohibit upfront payments, but that it requires that measures be put in place to minimize the risk. Finance did not stipulate the measures, but agreed with the measures introduced by the CIS unit. DSBD continued to utilize the approach of upfront payment, and following risk measures were put in place to mitigate the risk as required by the PFMA. DSBD put in place the following risk measures to ensure risks are mitigated. The approved cooperative signed a cessation letter to allow payment directly to the service provider. Declare in writing that it is not connected to the service provider. Declare in writing that activities have been completed to their satisfaction. The approved service provider must provide an invoice in its own trading name. An original credit order instruction form certified by the bank of the service provider. Original and valid tax clearance certificate, written confirmation of the delivery date as soon as possible after payment has been received, establishment of a post-disbursement monitoring system, post-disbursement inspection to determine whether the goods and services of the correct quality and quantity have been delivered, where the goods services are used for their intended purpose, as well as the progress of the cooperatives in general. In 2009 and 10 financial year, out of more than 200 payments for cooperatives that were finalized, only two of these payments, approximately 1.7 to service providers, were found to be problematic because although the service providers received payments, they did not deliver the goods. After severe follow-ups, the two cases were then handed over to the DTI legal unit for legal action against the service provider. Between 2014 and 15 and 2017 and 18 financial year, a total of 200 cooperatives were supported to the value of 274.2 million. During the period, 12 service providers did not deliver and their cases were transferred to the department's legal unit for legal action to be taken against them. Due to the risk measures that were put in place, the failure by service providers to full contractual obligation has been minimal at best. They were all forwarded to legal unit for resolution. Practically, only one case was resolved and the remaining 11 cases are in process. This is the just stats that we're giving that talks only to one financial year just to show up how we are spending the money. And then I want to then conclude by just saying that CIS does not make use of network facilitators. It purchases directly machinery and equipment and stock from suppliers. It does not pay commission, management fees, etc. All its investment to cooperatives is spent directly to supporting cooperatives. Although the slide above provided funding expenditure to cooperatives covering only 2017 and 18 financial, however, the whole amount of 274 was spent to 922 cooperatives as from 2014 right up to 2017 and 18 financial year. An assessment that was carried out of the 400 CIS revealed that 71% of the fund cooperatives were operational and only 29% were found to be non-operational. There is a serious challenge with the CIS IT unit, which we are resolving, ladies and gentlemen. It is something that we're sorting out with the State Information Technology Agency, is assisting DSBD to develop an online application IT system that would address the identified challenges. There's a lack of capacity to continuously monitor and evaluate the impact of CIS, but we are building that particular capacity, and we are also going to evaluate the cooperatives that were funded in 2018 financial year accordingly. These are just the case studies that we're giving, very two of them, of how the CIS is impacting on the projects. They speak for themselves. Currently, in terms of the turnover, this cooperative is now registering 60,000, where it moved from 20,000 per month. And then on this one as well, it is also registering, we had given it a capital expenditure of 360,000, and this has enabled the business to maintain a good financial health and also direct their funds to other development initiatives. And then I think that ends my presentation, Chair. Thank you very much.
Well done. I'll hand over to the CEO chairperson.
It will be led by Ms. Majola, who is the head of the unit where we have the Gazals now.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll also try to beat Jeff's record in terms of being precise. Okay. The first slide talks to what the Gazelles program is all about and what are its main objectives. The purpose of the program is really to identify high-performance small businesses to accelerate the development of their businesses through focused intervention. It's a South African program that was benchmarked and took lessons from other similar programs outside the country. It also fits well within the current narrative of a radical economic transformation. And I must also emphasize that until now, it's been a pilot program. It is a strategic fit with the National Development Plan, IPAP, and can enhance performance of other government programs through using small businesses that are high performing. Investors pay a premium for a growing business, that is the general economic value add, the positive difference between the return on capital as well as the cost of capital. Each business's intention should always be, in terms of the Gazelles program and other similar accelerator program, to increase the return on capital, to reduce the cost of capital, that is earning same amount of profit with less capital, as well as building the competitive advantage of the business. So the value of the business is built by increasing the predictability of the business, that is diversifying cash flow and improving the... It's based on what is called the value builder model, which I'll unpack later, and looks at eight elements of the business. What were the selection criteria for the participating businesses? The first one was creativity and innovation, which looks at the extent to which a business uses technology, the extent to which a business is prepared to introduce new things, new approach in doing new things and introducing new products, as well as the growth potential of the business. The second one is human resources. The third one, governance and administration, which looks at overall management, strategic management, financial reporting. The fourth one, regulatory and compliance, which is compliance with SARS, compliance with the principles of black economic empowerment, environmental friendliness, as well as the local procurement. What are the interventions that were offered to Gazelles that are not necessarily available to CEDA? The first one was to capitalize on the use of technology. One of the things that were introduced into the program is what is called the Gazelles Portal, which serves both as a communication platform between the program managers and the Gazelles, but also serves as a source of information for the businesses that are participating in the program. The second one is delivering business advice through webinars, because obviously the businesses are all over the country and it's not cost effective to always bring all of them in one room. Therefore, capitalizing on ICT. The value builder system, I'll unpack the value builder system later on in the presentation. Masterclasses, looking at different aspects of what a small business needs, whether it's tendering successfully, whether it's reducing costs on the business, whether it's addressing individual risk that would have been identified at the time the business came on board on the program. I think I must also mention that once a business gets nominated or approved to be part of the GAVELF program, the first intervention is the benchmark exercise, looking at various elements of each individual business. Then that benchmark exercise is the one that is used as the business progresses in the program to monitor its growth. Okay, facilitating the incentive application. The incentive application is mainly the BBSDP program, which is also accessible to the GAVELF once they reach that stage in their value builder roadmap, where they need to apply for a BBSDP incentive. Online resource to tender opportunities, as well as the supplier development program. Assistance with quotations for contracts, as well as the financial support services. The CEDA network is not totally divorced from the GAVELF program. We have a program manager within CEDA that monitors the implementation of the program. Once the GAVELF get nominated or appointed to the program, CEDA staff, together with the program manager, conduct site visits to each and every GAVELF that applied into the program as part of verifying information that gets submitted to us, and to verify that yes, the business does exist and it has all the information that has been submitted to us. We also assist them with market access through local as well as international exhibitions. These are some of the high-level results. I think the biggest impact can be seen in the overall value and score improvement of each business. The program succeeded in accelerated development of 68% of the businesses that were on the program. 68% of the businesses on the program also managed to increase their performance by 17%, resulting in a 30 million rand increase in business value from 92 million rand to 122 million rand. 71% of the businesses on the program increased their growth potential by 17%. 37% of the businesses on the program also de-risk their businesses, making them less dependent on any one single point of failure. I think one of the biggest problems with most of the businesses that came into the program and any other small business is the owner dependency. So it teaches the owners to rather work on the business rather than being the key person and the only person that knows what's happening in their businesses. Okay, the rest of the slides, I won't go into them in detail, but they just show summary improvement in each of the businesses in terms of profit, in terms of full-time jobs created, part-time jobs that were created. The slides also indicate the geographic breakdown of the businesses. The 27 businesses that made up the 68% that improved their scores, it indicates the provincial breakdown. Most of them were from Gauteng, followed by KZN, and then 12% in Limpopo, and then the balance was thinly spread across all provinces. It also shows the industries where there was maximum impact, the main one being manufacturing, health, energy, and then the balance, again, thinly spread across all other provinces. And then the last point is on the demographic, or rather, the racial breakdown of the percentages. This slide shows the initial, how the initial program was structured. We started with one cohort of 40, which will finish 3 years in March next year. Then last year we also took on board another cohort of 40 that is supposed to finish in 2020. We put the third cohort on hold, partly because the contract with the service provider came to an end and we did not renew the contract with the service provider. We're now insourcing the program within CEDA. The program with the service provider came to an end in April, and we're bringing the program in-house. Okay. This slide shows the talk to the budget that was allocated for the program. We only paid the service provider for the first two groups, obviously, because we didn't take the third cohort on board. Therefore, we didn't pay the service provider the budget that was set aside for the third cohort. On insourcing the program quickly, we're replacing the outsourced program management unit and we've brought it in-house. The outsourced interventions, just talk to the 12-hour interventions that were allocated to each business around mentorship. This slide also shows the amount of money that we are saving for bringing the program management in-house. We'll be utilizing some of our internal staff, and we are working with one of the service providers. This is called the Business Doctors as a transition, a transitionary measure in bringing the program in-house. I think the budget, we'll deal with the budget when we get to the questions. The risk areas of the program, I think outsourced program and payment management, budget and spending reconciliation, these are the risks that we identified and we addressed during the implementation of the program. What are some of the challenges that we encountered in the company performance? One of them was like cyclical products that have low turnover during certain seasons obviously affects the performance of the company. Product mix, especially with companies in the construction sector, sometimes they get affected by short-term contracts. Obviously, that affects the benchmark performance of the businesses in the construction sector. Government businesses, we tend to peak in February and March, each year. I think these are businesses that are dependent on government tenders. Companies always updating their information on the system on time. We also learned that innovation and improvement of competitiveness remains a challenge for small businesses. Protection of their intellectual property is also one of the important areas that NEFCO has for small businesses, regardless of the fact that they have a big potential for growth. What are some of the key lessons that we learned? For high growth businesses or businesses in an accelerated program, interventions need to be as specific as possible because generic training is not for them. When we started, in fact, the program, we started with 200 and then we selected the 40 out of the 200. We still kept the 60, which was assisted mainly through CEDA branches. And the reason we kept the 160 was also to give them an opportunity when we opened the window for the second group for them to apply. But what we learned that if they don't make the first 40, they then lost interest in remaining part of the bigger group of the 160. The first group that we selected, we also took into consideration the geographic spread and ensure that each province has have businesses that are involved in the Gazelle program, which means to a certain extent some of the businesses did not quite meet the criteria of being Gazelles. That's one of the lessons we learned from the first group. As a result, when we did the selections for the second group, it was strictly on merit. We didn't try to balance the geographic spread, because that also tends to compromise the impact of the intervention. Companies that are in the Gazelle program, they do present a good pipeline for the Black Industrialist program. We assisted at least three Gazelles to submit applications to the Black Industrialist program of the DTI. We're still waiting for the responses from the DTI.
Yes, Chairperson. Thank you very much. We've completed our presentation.
Are there any critical additions from the two CEOs? I mean, the CEOs and the chair of the board. Can we say any comments?
Maybe a brief comment, Chairperson. Thank you. Just to highlight, because I know it has been something of a sore messaging from the Gazelles in terms of their ability to access the BBSDP grant. I can say yes, initially with the first cohort, there were challenges indeed, and these challenges were based on various factors, factor one being that the BBSDP is a specific program with its specific administration requirements. And to try and fit these Gazelles into these requirements, it means there was a development path as well as part of the program to make sure that the process aligns in terms of the submissions and where the Gazelles need to be further developed as part of their program, their development in the program, that is done. But I can report, Chairperson, that those teething problems, we have had series of interventions to say how do we manage them. The first thing is that now we are managing by making sure that we have block submissions for the Gazelles into the program so that we can deal with the challenges in the administration process per groups instead of each time with single applications dealing with the challenges as if new. The other thing I could report, Chairperson, is that since then there have been some approvals, I think about 13 Gazelles as when we were preparing this report had received approvals for their grants. But I'm talking 13 in terms of approvals that led to some disbursements. Otherwise, others are also in the pipeline. However, there are Gazelles that have been seen not to be ready to submit applications. So it's not like all Gazelles in Cohort 1 have submitted applications. It's within the management of their development that at one stage it can be advised that this is not the right time for the Gazelle company to submit the application.
Any comment, Dr. Zani?
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. I think you need to take cognizance of the fact that CIDA has great experience in working with informal to micro enterprises over the years. And moving into the Gazelles is taking it to a higher level, which is why we had an external service provider to provide other services to the more sophisticated businesses when it looks into their growth. So what is happening now is that we need to strengthen our strategic positioning in order to be able to quite well service the high end of the small of the SME sector. So there's going to be a lot of capacity building that needs to be built into the organization to be able to do this. But also, it doesn't matter what we do. If the foundation is not right, the building is bound to crumble. So we need the rocks, the environment that's actually going to support the economic development activities that need to happen countrywide. So at the same time, as CEDA, we'll be looking at how government facilitates the whole issue of reviewing policies and acts and laws that actually do impact on bad business development. It is a crisis on the ground. Thank you.
Let me note, members, Honorable Chance, Mbukua, and Dr. Maruti, Honorable Kavan, Honorable Bongo, in that order, Honorable Chance.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the Department for the parade of presentations. I just want to take us back to a meeting that we had a few months ago, just across the passage, when Lindo presented, I think it was you, the strategy of the Department to look at the life cycle of small businesses, from ideation, startup, the architecture, exactly. And I think that the reason I ask that question is because it's very pertinent to what we've heard this morning in terms of the various programs that that you've presented. Because, they represent, maybe not intentionally, because these programs have been around for a while, with the exception of the Enterprise Incubation Program, interventions at that at the various stages of growth. So I'd just like to ask the question, maybe to you, DG. How do you see these programs fitting into that architecture? And do you think that you've plugged the holes at every stage of that life cycle of the business? And if you haven't, where are the holes that need to be plugged? Because clearly, you know, at the bottom end, you know, you've got startups. But that doesn't mean to say that a startup is a micro-enterprise. A micro-enterprise will forever maybe remain a micro-enterprise. But some startups have the potential to grow into very large companies. So, you know, how do you move them from one program to another? Or do you carry them from the same, you know, all the way through the same program to the point where you say, off you go, you're now, you know, fully fledged, you can look after yourself? And I'm just a bit concerned that maybe that sort of thinking hasn't really filtered through yet to the way in which your programs are delivered and designed, first of all, and delivered. The other thing that is a bit of a concern to me is, first of all, what has happened to the incubation support program at the DGI? Because remember, one of the things this committee made a big noise about right from the beginning is the fact that the ISP wasn't moved over to your department, and it never has. So I'd like to know what has happened to that program. And a related question is, possibly with the exception of, obviously the BBES, the Black Business Supply Development Program, because that's a grant. That's not, by the way, it's not an incentive, it's a grant. You must understand the difference between those two. And in fact, this committee has raised this point before. You have to distinguish between a grant, which is a sum of money which is handed over to a recipient or a beneficiary, and an incentive, which is an incentive to do something through a tax incentive or something like that. But anyway, that's a technicality. And also the cooperative incentive scheme, which doesn't really have a private sector equivalent. The question that I'm asking is, to what extent are your programs crowding out the private sector that are spending a lot of money on these types of programs. In fact, if you look at the amount of money spent through ESD, Enterprise Supply Development, anything between 20 and 30 billion rand is being spent by the private sector through the BEE codes of good practice, which makes your expenditure look absolutely trifling, almost like insignificant. So what is the point of it, is the question I'm asking. How does it actually compare with what is going on in the private sector? Which isn't to say that the private sector is doing great things. In fact, it probably isn't, because a lot of that money is just being shoved down the drain. It's going to expensive service providers, and most of it is not actually ending up in the pockets of the businesses themselves. That's a discussion that we should have in this committee. And so, DG, if I'm not mistaken, you presented at the conference organized by SEPTI Bukula last year on the business support services, business support institute. It was basically, there was an agreement that was reached between the department and this outfit to create a professional business support person. You know, in other words, professionalize the business support industry. Extremely important, and this committee has made mention of that. So I'd like to know, how is that proceeding? And, you know, again, it comes back to the question of what is the role of this department compared to what is being done in the private sector? Surely what the department must be spending more time on doing is building an understanding of the effectiveness of the various interventions in the entire ecosystem in South Africa, and saying, well, you know, this is where there are so-called market failures. In other words, the market is not prepared to support a particular intervention. This is where we need to be intervening as government, as opposed to saying, well, you know, private sector is better off doing these things, we shouldn't get involved. Now, I mean, for example, CIFA likes to consider itself as filling the gap where there is market failure. Well, unfortunately, market failure results in small businesses applying for loans that they can't afford, so they don't pay them back, which doesn't look very good on CIFA's balance sheet. But anyway, getting back to the presentation this morning, it seems that the Enterprise Incubation Program is mainly supporting micro-enterprises from the numbers that you're giving us. Are these businesses actually going to grow into anything? Or are they just survivalist businesses that, you know, need a bit of help? In which case, really, is there any point in this program? I mean, are you actually making an impact on the economy? You're supporting a relatively small number of businesses, a few hundred. And is this actually developing into, you know, in terms of, the life cycle, businesses that have the potential to grow? Are these incubators receiving money from other sources? So you've got the Enterprise Incubation Program. Are these incubators only receiving funds from government, or are they also receiving enterprise development or supply development funds or other sources of funding for the private sector? In which case, have you got data on that? I'm glad to see that the network facilitator is being phased out, because it seems to me that it just introduces another cost which should be borne by the service providers. Why do you need a service provider and a network facilitator? Surely the CEDA business advisor should be providing that role, should be fulfilling that role. So far as the cooperatives go, I'm glad to see that you seem to have got a grip, Geoffrey, on the 400 co-ops. Now that you've got 70% or so succeeding, or 20% or so not. But I'd still like us to see the overall figures in terms of the numbers of people employed in addition to the cooperative members, the growth in terms of turnover, blah, blah, blah. Profits. I know that profitability is not necessarily an indicator of success in a co-op, but it's still, they need to be sustainable. They can't just survive on grants all the time. The other concern is that by increasing the minimum investment or the minimum grant to 400,000, you're within a limited budget, you're significantly reducing the number of co-ops that you're going to be able to support. Is that a good thing? I'm not sure, but there's no question that that's going to be an outcome of that decision. I'd like your thoughts on that. Then when it comes to the gazelles, you talk about investors. Who? What are these investors on page 45? That, again, it's a grant, as far as I can see. I mean, presumably you're investing time and resources into the gazelles. Ms. Majority, you said that you were going to explain the value builder. You didn't explain the value builder. I'd like to understand what that is. And then, again, the national gazelles, you know, according to the work done internationally, a gazelle is a business that can grow at 20% annually for a period of 3 to 5 years. Are these businesses showing it? Well, some are, some aren't. And what proportion of the total amount that was spent on the gazelles went to the service provider as opposed to the actual beneficiaries? And that presumably is now going to be a saving, although there will be, as Dr. Zwani says, there will be a capacity building requirement within CEDA so that you can actually support these businesses. So if you just answer that again. And then, yeah, this thing on page 56, needs-based interventions. That's the biggest sum of money spent, $6 million, $8 million, I think it was. What are needs-based interventions, and what is that money spent on? It looks like two very round numbers to me, 4 million rand, 8 million, 800,000. What are those? Well, what are those amounts? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Chance, let's take Honourable Kruger.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the department for the very informative presentation. Chair, luckily I only have two questions. My first question is on page 11 and 12. Actually, there's two questions about that. First of all, I want to know from the department if it's possible to send us the addresses of the incubators. Where are they situated so that we can most probably follow it up, number one. And number two, I don't see Mpumalanga's name under the provinces. So I would like to know why is there not one single incubator in Mpumalanga, seeing after the Eastern Cape most probably the most rural province in South Africa. So I don't see any investment in incubators in Mpumalanga, and I want to know why. Then on page 34, Chair, the CIS program, the first bullet point, it stated it's for infrastructure, machinery, equipment, commercial vehicles, etc., you know, money available. But what about training? Can't we fund training as well from a CIS grant? That's the first point. And the second point, why can't we use, seeing that they increase this CIS grant now, why can't we use it to buy successful businesses? Why must we always just invest in startups? I mean, surely cooperatives can buy successful businesses and just take off from there. Or maybe even employees can decide, let's form a cooperative and buy the business and just carry on with it. So maybe we must just expand this, the scope of getting or apply for the grant. I just want to know about that. So it's about the training and buying a successful business. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Mishra.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have a few questions. On page 7, they speak about the set time period for an incubatee to graduate and exit. I want to know what is the average time if they talk about the set time to graduate. What is the average time? And in page, on page 11, looking at amounts that have been approved, I want to know how they determine these approvals, because when I look at what Limpopo has been granted, for 14 cooperatives, they are granted 5 million. And Eastern Cape, for 10 cooperatives, which is less, they are granted 8 million. So I want to know how they determine the figures. Page 15, one of the challenges they have is lack of internal capacity within DSBD. We have been hearing about lack of capacity for some time, so I want to know what is being done about that, because whenever something is not happening, it's because of lack of capacity. How are they improving the capacity? And page 33, Jeff said they want each cluster to grow individually. They want each cluster to grow individually. Now, the question there is, are these clusters doing the same projects or different projects? And if they're doing the same project, how do you quantify if there is growth or not individually? How do you measure that? And page 35, direct payments to cooperatives, we are told, is too high a risk. And payment to service providers is preferred. Obviously, these service providers are giving the assistance at a fee. So I want to know whether it is free, or are they getting a percentage of what they're managing? Because it would be difficult to understand, to believe that they're managing all these funds without making any deductions from the funds that they are managing. And maybe the last question, the last page, 58. Financial reporting is a major challenge. And it says because members are either reluctant or slow to share accurate financial information. Now, this is serious. If there are people that need to help, those with no information, and they're reluctant to help, what interventions are taken to ensure that those with information are become willing to share the information with those that need it? Thank you.
Colleague Carla?
No, thanks, Chair. I think we welcome the presentation as done. I see it as having some other things which previously were lacking, like they have outlined provincially how it may have, the department may have been successful, and also some example case study or projects that are successful by pictures also, which is commendable. Chair, I think on page 5, on bulletin 2, currently there are 129 private and public funded incubators in the country. Of Disney Network, DSPD and CEDA supports 80 incubators. I realize that it's CEDA technology program. Perhaps is this only one of specific, or there are other programs, because that you didn't include in your presentation, but in your briefing, then you outlined it. And then on page 7, what makes an incubator? The thing is this our model or just a generally accepted model? Because it's like the department is defining its own model, but then I would have felt better to understand perhaps why this model and those other ones not okay. Is it self-initiated, policy-driven, legislative-driven? Because surely one would want to be clarified if you have just created your own model. And then Chair, I guess there was a long presentation, so you'll bear with me, but I'm getting there into the questions I would really love to ask. On page 13, 90% of the beneficiaries are based in the rural and township areas. I don't know, maybe a descriptive of this, because remember in our engagement with the department, the issue of the black, poor, and those disadvantaged remain paramount to us. And it's like you are hiding behind a statement here. I wish you could satisfy it to give us a very clear definition. Non-performing incubators on page 14. I think I may have had a question here while the presentation was earlier, but as you continued, you then elevated or made me not to be still questioning. But then a counter question then would come, because the question was to say, what are the shining and best projects which in the 100 days or 150 days of President Ramaphosa, of Minister Lindiwe Sisulu, whom we can say these ones you can go and shine on and visit, really we have delivered. So I have seen them, you have somehow outlined, but would you really give such advice so that the portfolio and the ministry were able to say, no, President, we are inviting you to one other project for you to see. I know that other portfolio of communications will be in Velcom, Minister Mkonyane, and it's one other shining example. So we can't be in meetings forever. For us is to deliver and people to see we are fixing, we are implementing, we are visible, you know. So, because we don't want picture report. You know, what you see on paper and practical can be a different story. So can you give us confidence, really, to say, one, two, yes, they are liable, they could be visited too. Chair, on I could say page 18 and 19, page 18 and 19. It speaks of independent contractor. The presentation will go as to say there are no strings attached to these independent contractors. The presentation will go on to say we have created a relationship, and on the next slide, the presentation will then say, on the page 18, it says also they will deal with minor problems, and they don't dictate to us what to do. But on page 19, as the presentation goes, it says no. These, I don't know if network facilitators are also independent contractor or what, but now you are saying they are utilized to reduce time and costs and to ensure that the access to funding, the time is limited. And so it's like now it's like they are formalized, their operation, and it's like now they are accountable because they have a role to play, and so that the funding gets to be received quicker. By who? And are they not present to facilitate their opportunity to get funding? Because they work with these things. So I just want the correlation of your page 18 and 19 to make me clearer and understand. I think in line with that, because it will also go to Jeff and the last presenter. You see, in the department, I don't know maybe what is a qualitative word. Is it legally or small development, Amanda, of a word? On the other program, you are independent contractor. On the other, you are network facilitators. On the last one, you are doctors. And it's like, I don't know, maybe, you know, I just wanted to understand that thing. Because CIS said it does not use those people. So, you know, so you are, I think we are learning, or we are getting some terms here. On page 22, the same like Honorable, over there, you know, your Free State, you only have one project. I mean, maybe you will respond to say, can we bring more so that you assist? Maybe you didn't see them. There are still those who really need assistance, and it's quite key to know if the department is zooming to that space as well, because surely here for us is to serve the country and everybody equally, not being biased to the thing. Maybe to Jeff on page 38. You see, the country currently is looming and has problems around issue of corruption. You know, the 11 cases are in process and the legal action taken. What are the case numbers? And what are the details? And really, are we closing that space to be not continually reporting it? Because what is bad cannot be a subject matter to be reported randomly. We must say the end time for this is this one. And then we eliminate this thing. It's not a bad, it's not a good thing, the page 38 to standing. So why are we keeping it as if we are comfortable with it? We don't want something that proposes, that suggests that the department can be alleged or be seen as being corrupt. You know, I mean, let's move with the trend that the country is really at, because we are one government here. So in us doing so, it will assist. And then I think, Chair, that closes my questions, which I may have noted here. Thanks, Chair.
Comment, Bongo.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think majority of the questions have been attended to, but to thank the DG and the presenters for having taken time to prepare the report. This is a well-prepared report, and thank you for that. I think I want to take it, page number 11, to take it further from where the Honorable Moruti has raised. To say Limpopo, the money is 5 million for 14 and going down, but I'll be interested on the breakdown. But out of this 14, how much did one get from the 14 And as you go down Limpopo, Gauteng, Eastern Cape, and so on, the proportion of how much one got from this one. I'll be interested in that, even if they don't have the details, they can write to us so that we can see the extent to which we are spreading the resources. And then secondly, from what Honorable Kroger has said, I don't see anything in Mpumalanga. And I raised this last time that I'm always approached by a number of people in the...
Honorable Kruger is heavily nodding his head. you can now be assured that we have terrible queens here. No, but I also have my chance to my room people.
Oh, okay. So
let's proceed.
So the issue of Mpumalanga, there's nothing in Mpumalanga, and I'm worried about that. Because there's also one issue that people raise as you go down a chair, and the people in the rural areas were not our focus. Like if you can look at that page link to this page 11, page 20. Page 22. Let's check page 22. You see, and also taking it from where Honorable Taba raises. Say Free State is only one, but not only one. Look, it's 40. The amount compared to the other amounts, other than being one. And if you check here, the rural. Are getting a smaller piece of the cake. And in 23, they are saying 90% goes to rural and township. So this thing does not talk to each other. And the people in the rural areas are crying that they are even afraid to make proposals, because when the proposals get to the offices, somebody just removes their names. You know, they remove their names and paste other names and continue with the project as though. So stealing of the mind of the people from rural. So to what extent, what have we done to ensure that we protect the intellectual property that these people are giving? Because there is a serious outcry that people will just take a sick proposal, just remove the names and paste other names and proceed and get funding. So I want to know to what extent have we dealt with that matter. And I see that we are recording some successes in terms of some of the businesses. I also want to know that are they getting the funding or the grant from us, or is there any other source of funding elsewhere that that contribute towards the success, or it's out of the work that we have put ourselves. Yeah, I think for now, Chair, I'll end there. Thanks.
Thank you, Comrade Bongo. In addition to some of the questions asked, is that I know I'm asking this question while it was unasked. In other ways, you know, I'm just using different words. Do we get the feeling, or are we convinced that we are saving the target group, or we are saving the middle person? Do we confidently feel that if we walk into a township, people will say, hey, we will lululate and say, oh, here comes Sifa, here comes Sida. Do we get that feeling? Or is it possible that accidentally we are not quite where we should be? Are we making impact on the real target group? because very unintentionally we can find the bulk of the funds going to the middle people. You know, that point was raised by my colleagues. And on the incubator experiences, what are our experiences in South Africa and what are our experiences in the rest of Africa and the developing world, and what is our experiences on the developed, the so-called first world countries. And then the gazelles, do we get the impression that the funds that we use through gazelles are going to the intended beneficiaries? Can we, with confidence, because we will undertake oversight visits, can you say that, no, don't worry members, the day you go for oversight visits, you will derive satisfaction. Then there is also the criteria related to gazelles. Can we give more flesh on that one? That criteria is well, it's well thought. It's fair. It's redistributive in nature. But the other question is, these incubators and the incubatees, do we have a list of them and their addresses? And then the incubation, does it also relate to mining? Is mining part of that? Then, but the network facilitators, did we have to go that route after we had continually been complaining that we must do less with middle people, do less with middle people? We have CEDA, but did we have to go through that experience? What was CEDA doing when we had to go through the network facilitators? Does it mean we had to test? Couldn't we have foreseen that will go against the aim of the funds getting to the ultimate poor and working class people? Couldn't we have foreseen that? And then the Department of Labor, do we have a relationship with the Department of Labor in as far as it has some training programs? Do we relate? Do we work together? And maybe even when I mention Department of Labor, and as well as the other two spheres of government, provinces and municipalities. Let me end there, also by expressing gratitude for the input that has been made. DG, over to you and your team.
Can I ask CEDA to start their response by all of the issues around
the gazelles here and doing the
Chairperson and DJ, Andrew is a technocrat person when it comes to the gazelles at the moment. So he will take us through the value builder model. Whilst he is, I thought he was still busy finding something, but I can quickly just speak to the question on the proportion of spending of the gazelles budget to the service provider. It is worked on a percentage figure of 15% of tranche spent, 15%. So when you are looking at the year amounts that were on our presentation, per tranche spent, the agreement with the service provider was 15%. Andrew will take us through the value builder, will also take us through the question on the needs-based interventions, and Ms. Majola will touch on, I'm not sure, did you allowing that, the professionalization of business advisor, or did you want to take that? Okay. Yes, I think those were the key questions. In terms of the criteria question I think can be covered when we are talking to the value builder as well, because the value builder builds on the criteria of selection to say what we were selecting. Maybe if need be, I can come later on incubators. There was a question on incubators. Yeah.
Just before you take the floor, I would be very happy if most of you could also comment on the informal businesses. You know, those, most of them are women at the railway stations, along the road. They constitute quite a huge percentage of economic participants. But do they feel us? Do we support them? Or are we somewhere up there? They just look at us like they look at aeroplanes and say, there they pass. Or do they feel they belong? Do they belong to us? Or they don't know us?
Okay. Thank you, Chair.
If I can answer that, I mean, today we came to talk about EIP, BBSDB, Gazelles, and CIS, and none of those targets the informal sector. None of those programs target the informal sector.
No, then it's quite an answer. So, in other words, all these programs are not targeting the informal sector.
So, we have other programs that target the informal sector.
Yeah. No, I just hope that by the time we get to the other programs targeting to the informal sector, the money will still be there, you know. But let's see how it goes.
Okay, thank you, Chair. So I'm going to just start off answering a couple of the questions and dovetailing into the gazelles there. First of all, it's Andrew Bam from CEDA, work with Ms. Majola here. Firstly, addressing your question about the architecture, and I think that's the best place to start when addressing the gazelles, the gazelles question. So we have got a grading methodology that we do follow, which talks through the sort of business life cycle from startup, pre-startup and entrepreneurial awareness right through to go and what interventions are there. However, it also does get more complicated than that because you also have to differentiate between your survivalist sort of businesses and your opportunity entrepreneurs. You have to differentiate according to whether they're rural or urban. You have to differentiate according to what industry or sector they're playing in, education level of the entrepreneur themselves, structure of it, access to technologies and that, so that determines what type of interventions you're able to actually deliver and the channels you can deliver them through. So while I agree with you very much on that business life cycle, and that's what we plot it against and plot our programs and interventions against, there are other factors that also do need to be taken into account. So while it's a methodology, it's never a perfect fit. So I'm just going to start with that, and I hope that answers part of that question.
talking about the gazelles, yes, that we are looking at the higher end of the market, the upper end of the market, as we call it there, where it's a smaller number of businesses that we'll apply more resources into, hopefully creating a bigger impact in the longer term. And that's the general idea behind the entire program. Also want to just make it clear, this is still in the pilot phase. So we still have the first cohort that's going through, and they haven't finished the process yet with what they are doing over there. Addressing your question of the value builder methodology. So the value builder methodology is one that's owned in South Africa through business doctors. The idea there is to increase the value of the business. And somebody asked the question earlier of who are these investors. So the investors is anybody who would come in and purchase that business at a point in the future. So we aren't talking about investors now as far as interventions go, but as in who would come in and make an offer on it. And the idea is to increase the value, that the net value of the business, so that they'll get a higher purchase price in the future, theoretically speaking. So that's the overall arching idea behind it. It follows a number of separate indicators that they tend to track. So I'm just going to go through here so I make sure I don't make a mistake on this. So just excuse me there quickly. I'll just get to the right one. Yeah, so it breaks it up. While trying to build value, it focuses on 8 different specific areas that it tries to develop it, and it works online and then also through consultants that come and conduct specific interventions. The first of the specific areas that they focus on is the financial performance, which is a general type indicator, but it's really looking at increasing your margins, increasing your sales, creating efficiencies there. The next one is the growth potential, which is talking about creating stronger foundations, creating innovation and opportunities within the product or the service offering, so that there's a unique value proposition there that will allow you to grow or potentially compete internationally. Monopoly control, where you are too dependent on one specific thing, which increases risk, whether it be supplier, client, or owner, where all the IP sits within the owner's head and all the systems and controls, so trying to de-risk it that way. Hierarchy of recurring revenue, so it's identifying where your most valuable income and revenue streams are from, and the ones that you are able to grow, and also not putting in too much effort into revenue streams that don't give you the same big bang for buck. If I say the 80-20 rule, you want to focus on the revenue streams that really are going to be recurring and you can grow quite easily with minimal variation, as opposed to trying to do a whole bunch of tiny different things which don't really add the value and economies of scale down the line. Cash flow, of course, all small businesses, it's the most important thing, more important than profit or anything else, but is to ensure that the cash flow stays there and cash flow management stays there. Employee engagement, especially in South Africa, a big risk to any small business is the employee relationship, to ensure that you have the right people managed correctly and contracted correctly to cover one's back and the employee's back. General risk analysis, and then a customer score. So it's the customer, how customer-centric that organization is. So that's just going to talk through. Does that explain the value builder methodology sufficiently? Yes, business doctors. Okay. And then there was a question about, okay, what is a needs-based intervention versus this one, and why is the number so large? I heard that coming towards the end. That slide, so where we are at this point in time, the MOA has just recently expired, and we're in the process of internalizing the program. So currently we've still got 15 million rand ring-fenced for that program that would have gone to the service provider that we're now using internally. Those needs-based interventions are not generic in nature. So all 40 gazelles don't get exactly the same plug-and-play thing. They'll be assessed and depending on what their specific needs are as a business, whether it's export development, product development, technical mentorship, wherever that specific need is in order to grow it, on the top of the general standard interventions that you are getting, that will be supplied to them so that they can then accelerate their growth. So I know there's a number that require access to international markets and getting their product ready to do that. So that will be a specific sort of intervention and intervention path that we would follow to allow these guys to then exploit that and to be able to grow into international businesses, hopefully down the line. So and that's... So that's talking about that specific, and that's something that we're putting in place now that wasn't there in the past. And it's a place where we feel that there'll be a lot more value for the end business as opposed to the way it was structured initially. Okay, I think, ma'am, you're going to order the professionalization of business advisory. Okay, and you've answered the... So make sure that...
There was
the
20% growth trend, I think that was Mr. Chan was asking that. To say, maybe I can just continue on that question. I think the response is that we've seen, for example, now we're giving an average of 17% growth performance. In that is the weighted average. In that average, there have been companies that had the growth, I think the highest was about 26% but that is a net average that has companies that are above that. But one thing that I could say is in the first year, because now we are taking our results that we're sharing from the first cohort greatly, because that's the cohort that has gone through a reasonable period in terms of intervention under this program. We have seen that initially, once you begin to work with these companies, trying to give them a structure to work within, sometimes there is some kind of imbalances, because you'd see other companies now dropping in their performance because they are trying to adapt or they are trying to build on their efficiencies, and you find that maybe in other areas they would be scaling down in terms of their job creation ability because of the restructuring period that they are going through. However, we have as well, working with the business doctors, the interest is that the business doctors is the model we are working on. It's a model that is an international model, to a point that recently we took some of our success story, Ghazal, which ended up being invited by the business doctors to go and present in a conference of business doctors in Los Angeles, because they had seen the effect of the model on this company, and it was invited. So taking that example, we can see that there is something positive out of what we're doing. The second company that has shown sustenance, if I can mention, has been Gribo, a small company initially, but that ended up internationalizing within a space of a year of them being this program. The third company is in the ICT, if I can mention, Baya Jagula, I'm coming there. Again, that company is one of those in the ICT sector that has shown this stable growth above 20%. The last one, to manage time, that I can mention is Flatfoot, a company in the Eastern Cape that is in the high manufacturing technology, manufacturing sector, that has come up with innovative products that showing benefits, for example, in the health sector. He has been modeling some extracting equipment with the Department of Health using some hospitals like Freer Hospital, and it's something that has shown good results, and from what he has demonstrated and what is coming up in terms of the acceptance of the product, it's one of the companies that I can as well mention to say it's one of those that will stay above the 20% growth.
Thank you. Andrew?
Sorry, ma'am, just the last two questions on the Ghazal that I think was asked by the chair over there. Is it okay if I just finish answering on those Ghazals ones and we can put the Ghazals to bed? Okay, I think the first one, the one question was, do we get the impression that we get value for money from the Ghazals program and the site visits are going to be there? Depends how one's going to look at it. It's a pilot program, so we are trying things out here and we've had to change it along the way. So while overall, if you compare it to other accelerator programs pitched at the same level in the private sector, it's relatively comparable. It's in the same ballpark if you look at certain reports and that have been done there. But I think the real value for us has really been identifying exactly what types of interventions and how to deal with the upper-end clients and how to be able to accelerate them. So now that we're able to internalize it and take those learnings on board, the real value is actually in us being able to go forward and to better service that end of the market. So, yes, we can talk jobs and turnover and profit to a degree, and there it's okay. It's so-so. There are some guys who are going to be unhappy, some who will be happy, and some who are confused. But overall, I think there has been value so far in what we've done there. And then the final one, you're talking about the selection criteria. Do we think it's redistributive and fair in the way that it's structured? I think if you look at the positioning of the Gazelles program, now the logic behind the program is to try and find the best businesses we can to give them as much of an injection as we can to grow them as quickly as we can. So that's to increase as many jobs as possible and increase sort of the economic power as possible. So in some ways, no, it's not fair because we're really focusing on performance here. But in that term, it is fair. So if you look at the demographics across the board there, it is redistributive. It has tended to show a relatively even spread across the provinces, across industries, across sectors. So that's the way it is. But it has been based on performance. And that is the one thing that we do want to reward there is performance coming forwards and going forwards. So I hope that answers your question, sir.
Yes, it does partially, but I just want, because I don't want to forego of the group that I believe the department must always take an interest in looking after. I wouldn't want us to mistakenly agree with you, the department, when you want to project yourselves here and leave the majority of the people down there. Let me make an example. If we take a place like Orlando Industrial Park in Orlando East, do those groups fit into the Gazelles model? You know, if we take the same park in Sidibeng, we also have the same park in Sidibeng, do those fit into the Gazelles models? I'm saying this because we have not taken a very active exercise of playing an oversight role. So we depend on you to convince us that you indeed are also saving the poorest of the poor and pushing them up. Because it's poverty eradication and the inequalities are not going to be addressed if your programs do not also aim to pull up those that are down there so that you can boast about them and say, we found them there and today they are here.
Okay, so just to answer that, at the end of the day, yes, it does. But as I was talking at the beginning about the architecture, that graduation approach, so there are programs all along that life cycle. So some that are targeted specifically at the informal and micro-enterprise sector, maybe specifically at areas where maybe there's challenges with access to communication, so technology. So you can't deliver interventions or whatever digitally. You have to start doing face-to-face right through to your sort of Gazelles program at the other end. And the whole philosophy behind that is that we can take a business, let's say it's Mom Nandi who's selling oranges somewhere in Zamin, and we're able to take that person, take them through a place where they can work on their program, work on their product, become formalized. Once they're formalized, start working on systems and processes and product diversification, then find clients and market access, and slowly build them up to a point where when they're able to join the Gazelles program, they're able to fly. Because it also is unfair on that person to take them there, put them in the Gazelles, and they don't get any value out of those interventions. So a lot of it's about the preparation, and the various programs and interventions are about preparing a client so that they are able to benefit from the interventions and the other ones that we do give them when they are ready to do it.
I'm sorry to repeat this question. I repeat it because I want us not to be too abstract. If we have a program by Department of Small Business Development and it doesn't speak to any of those that are in Orlando East Industrial Park, and also the park that we visited in Sidibeng. I'm just not locating the exact place, but you. My specific question is, do you have some of those that are going up the ladder through gazelles? And when I say those, it could be another park somewhere. And if the answer is no, then, you know, it tells me something. And if the answer is yes, the follow-up will be, which are those? So that when we do undertake study oversight visits, we also say, because most of what you are mentioning here, to me, it's not pulling up those poorest of the poor that do need handling to be pushed up the ladder. So it's specific again, Orlando East Industrial Park, do you have any? If the answer is no, then I will record it so. And if the answer is yes, which are those?
I think, Chairperson, the question is heard very well. I think in all fairness now, when we are here, we do not have a record in terms of name detail of clients. If we were to go, as an example, to our clientele database in terms of the provincial Gauteng office, we could probably find that there are some. If there are some, we can find that they are not all of the gazelle's caliber, because even at the park, they have their own criteria in terms of who gets the space at the park. So you'd find that the companies that are at the park, they are spread across the chain in terms of our value chain. And I would say they would be spread across the chain in terms of the small, medium, and formal, small, at the cutting edge of very small. Those are the kind of companies that would be in the parks that we are mentioning. But by specifics to say, in our books, do we have some in that park? I think let us just promise to go into our provincial database and respond.
And just so that it's well understood, I'm sampling that. I'm taking that park as a sample, which means it's countrywide. You go to Free State, you will find you have an equivalence. You go so that we must know whether that category is benefiting from the gazelles. So that you know from our side, we can at least have something that relates to what we have been oversighting on.
Maybe as a follow-up, Chairperson, to be specific, I could say not the gazelles. When I scan in my mind 80 companies that I know of and where they are of the gazelles, I could say there isn't a gazelle at the moment, but there could be a company that can qualify to be a gazelle. However, the gazelles program is an application-based program. So ours now, which is what we are doing with the provincial agencies, as an example, going beyond our own network of clients we have supported. Now we are even calling on the provincial development agencies, other development support agencies, to say, encourage your clients to submit applications when you are making a call for the gazelles.
It is a competition. They apply, and it is directed. It's based on an international model. It is based on specific criteria. That it is high-growth enterprises. And, for example, in the first year, there were something like 500 applications, and it's an online application. And the ones who went auditing firms and university academics, etc., that are involved in the selection, so that there isn't that kind of thing where you can say it's an official who doesn't like somebody or whatever, so that there's an independence in the selection. So I think I said at the beginning, the Gazelles program is not targeting the group that you are talking about, Honourable Chair. But that, and I also want to address the comment. In the first year, we looked at the applications and almost and went out of our way, or the auditors attempted to get a candidate from each of the provinces, so that it is representative. And I can, in all honesty, say of the 14. There were 28 who met all of the criteria, but there were 12 which did not meet all of the criteria, but they could, because we wanted to have this provincial spread, because it's a particular model that is being piloted. Something that is being done in the province, in addition to what the CEO was saying, where we don't have any candidates. For example, in the first year, I don't think we didn't have anybody from the Northwest. Or if we had, we didn't have anybody from the North. And then the MEC responsible for economic planning and finance then engaged in a pre-Gazelles program. So that at a provincial level, they are driving the program and say, what is it that we must do to grow these enterprises so that they can qualify? So I'm just saying we are presenting a few different programs, and we're just being upfront and saying the Gazelles does not target the informal businesses. That there are other interventions, and some of them could graduate, but at this point it does not target the informal business.
Just so that we don't misunderstand each other, when I spoke of the PACs, those are not necessarily informal businesses, but those are typical township businesses. If at the township level you say, no, Industrial Park, Orlando West, they are all below our level. Because remember, there is also NEF, National Empowerment Fund. You mustn't find that there's a competition between what NEF says and what you are supposed to say. You mustn't find that your funds are used to serve what should be served by NEF. I'm just making an example. There's ITC. You mustn't find with your little funds the people that should be served by ITC and NEF are served by yourselves from your very small purse. So it's a point that I'm making, and I stand by my point, but it's good because this is ongoing debate. Let's note that we differ, you know, so that we see as we go on where we do go. So maybe let's go to the other questions, because we have stayed too much on Gazelles, and I do want to differ with the DG. When you say your programs do not speak or intend to serve the informal sector. No, the four that have been presented. If cooperatives are not going to cater for those, that would be an anomaly. In other words, I'm saying, unless you I take it you accept that you made an error, because what cooperatives scheme must serve, it must also serve that category of the poorest of the poor. And if we agree, then Jeff doesn't have to come in. We will just agree that I corrected you, DG, on that part, because that remains our interest group, the informal sector. There is no way we can easily abandon it.
Then I'll withdraw. I won't enter into it.
Just a quick one, Chair, on the professionalization. On the professionalization of business advising, as a follow-up to the ICBA conference, there was a meeting that was convened by the DG with most of the industry bodies on the 5th of March this year, where we sort of discussed and mapped the way forward. and what is happening currently, the services sector through their entrepreneurship entrepreneurship and cooperative development institute, they offered to fund the process of developing that professional framework, which will include benchmarking with other countries as well, to look at a generally accepted designation, what kind of regulatory environment will be suitable, whether it, you know, it's a self-regulating kind of body with government's involvement from the policy side of things. So the services CETA, the department, CEDA, IBASA, and FEED are in the task team that is driving that process.
If that one on professionalization, it's also one of the it's a provision we're making in the amended the amendments to the National Small Business Act. So, that's an additional provision. And what we have found is that the existing standards, as Ms. Majola has said, was written way back in the 80s and is completely outdated. And the way in which the standards are written, it's also written in a way to exclude a lot of people from having that title and to only benefit a few. But it's something that we are addressing independently or in integrated way. Linda, can you do BBSDB?
Thank you, Chair. I will start with Honorable Chan's question on the architect, whether the interventions that we have today address the whole life cycle. I think Andrew did partially answer the question, but to indicate, Honorable Chan, that from this year in particular, we have a target in our non-APP target that addresses the issue of us looking at the implementation of the architect as we presented it to you. So we'll be able to come back to you at the end of this year and say, this is what we've attempted to do. But I'll indicate that within the PPSDP program, as you see on the criteria that we said, it starts from someone who's been in business for a year and they have a particular turnover, which is 250,000 and upwards. We've looked at coming up with something that addresses that gap of those who don't have any turnover at all. There is a sub-program we call Startup Enterprise Development Program, which will address that gap. But the bigger program that we'll implement next year, Chair, is the one, the Small Business and Innovation Fund, which is targeted towards the startup enterprises, which as well as innovative enterprises, which we are implementing this program together with Department of Science and Technology, because the innovative ideas will also be assisted through that process. So we'll be able to come back with the proper answer in terms of us being clear in terms of the life cycle of the business. In terms of the ISP, Chair, the program, it never migrated to the department. That's why National Treasury decided to give us the EIP program. Because the response that we got was that there was no line item that came directly from National Treasury for the ISP. So it was money that was taken from, I think it was the MSEP program within the Department of Trade and Industry. So they said, no, there is no line item or there is no line item that we can get, a separate budget that we can get to implement the ISP going forward. The other question, Chair, on to what extent are these grants crowding out private sector funding? We have not done a research on that. But on the ESD in particular, the Department of Trade and Industry, they are conducting through the BBBE Advisory Council. They are conducting a study which will be finished in 6 months because there are some issues that have been identified, especially with the expenditure of this ESD. I think you are correct when you said most of the money that is supposed to go to
enterprise and supplier development for SMEs goes to consultants. I think the advisory council has picked up that issue. So that's why they commissioned the study, which will should be finalized by 6 months, in 6 months' time.
And maybe on that, I don't think the department can ever crowd out the private sector without small budget. If our total budget is 1.4 billion, no, we can't. All that we are supposed to do, our job is to create an environment, in fact, to crowd in private sector investment and to make it possible. And when we introduce a pilot like EIP, it's to say, let us just see how can we apply that to get in the private sector. If I can give one example, I'm sorry that we did not include some success stories. One of our success stories on EIP, firstly, Chair, the EIP, as Lindor reported, was only started 2016-17, and the first agreements were signed around October, November of 2016. And therefore, it is a relatively short time to expect people to be showing profitability and an increase in jobs when they've really just started. So I think that's what we say in the presentation. It depending on the nature of the model, it will be evident over time. But one that I can mention is a property point that was funded early last year, which as far as we know is the only incubator in the property sector. And there, Property Point, which is a sort of a subsidiary of Growth Point, took some of their ESG funds, enterprise development funds, and $5 million, we gave $5 million. They have a particular set of criteria because they've done this before. They've got about 230 SMMEs on their database. And 16 enterprises were selected into the pilot. Of those, all 16 of those are black-owned. 47% of them are black woman-owned. 33% are township-owned. I actually personally visited that one. So if you ask us where do we target some of those enterprises who could be operating in Orlando's, or all of these are housing-based. And so, as I said, 57% of them are township-based. One of them is a company, it's a father and son company, that's manufacturing green, eco-friendly detergents. Two of the companies are doing cleaning services in offices. So it is the kinds of services that Property Point will need in property management. In a period of 6 months, after they first went through the training, but then they were ready to be awarded contracts from the 1st of October last year. Between the 1st of October and 31st of March, these companies collectively earned 21.9 million rand, okay? Which is, there's figures around employment, et cetera. But some of those are very, very, very small companies. So in the incubator, it's a different model where there's, and we can give you, I have on my computer a breakdown of all of that. And I believe we have, the chairperson wrote to me and asked the information that and we've provided the information of the addresses of all of these enterprises, where they are. So it is and I think we sent it last Monday on the 5th or the 5th or last Friday. So the information is in the hands of the chairperson. Go on, Linda.
Okay. Chair, I think the other question was, the EIP is mostly supporting micro enterprises. Honourable Chair, I think this is what we're also trying to address, because we don't want our programs to be seen as supporting the best performing entities already. So we're also trying, Chair, to balance the issue of rural and township enterprises.
That's why I think for the first time, which I think resulted in us not being able to cover all provinces, we are also looking at incubators that are specifically supporting cooperatives, which is something that we were doing for the first time. We were piloting this intervention, so we ended up looking especially specifically for cooperatives, incubatees, if I may put it that way. The other question, Chair, was, are these EIPs getting money from other people? Yes, Chair, some of them are getting money from other people. And this was also a pilot. We were trying it for the first time just to see whether we can be able to go or go an extra mile and get township and rural enterprises. But what we were very careful about is to make sure that the money does not go to the same thing. So, for example, one of the projects in the one in Limpopo, they got an infrastructure from a district municipality, and then we came on board in assisting to buy the equipment that they are utilizing currently. So there is that partnership between us and other spheres of government. On the issue of the, I think, the network facilitators, yes, I think that's the approach that we are adopting going forward, that we are phasing them out. I believe some of them have already started to complain that they are going to lose some business, but we believe that that money, the 10 million, could have gone maybe to 10 entities instead of it going to these service providers. Honorable Chair, the question from Honorable Kruger was on the, can you send the addresses of this incubator? I think it's part of the information that we've already submitted to the Portfolio Committee, because we are requested to submit information, the contact details, the physical addresses of all the projects we've supported. So we've provided that information to the Portfolio Committee. Yes, we submitted to the...
based on a letter that the chairperson sent to me asking for that information.
No, but if it only, we say it only came on Monday, am I right?
Not
this last week, Monday. No, but procedurally, it means they have, the department has done the right thing by sending it through the secretary. Am I right? I'm to the secretary.
Yes, I honorable members, following, I did receive a file, stayed with me, and then I was to engage the chairperson with, since she is not here. So I did receive a file.
But I think that when it's sent to the secretary, it is sent to us, because because that's our property as members. It means we can access it. It should come to the committee. So I'm just speaking on procedure. I take it that the department has done the right thing. Honorable Chance, Honorable Kruger.
No, I hear you, Chair. I just think, Secretary, if you could please consult with the Chair as soon as possible, because that information is very important for our recess activity. So that we can do oversight.
I feel a bit stupid because, you know, I ask a question and then it was answered that we're supposed to have it already. So surely when the department sends something to our secretary must just let us know and say, surely we have this information. Then I don't have to ask a stupid question in the committee. Thank you.
No, actually, that's unfortunately it's an inappropriate word to use, Honorable Kruger. If one way or the other, the verbal interaction has invoked that way, No, let me, from the chairing position, that say that it shouldn't have gone that way. That's not an appropriate way to be invoked.
No, I'm not allowed the mic, but no, I don't agree with you. Yeah, let me put it that way. We don't agree with what you said. We disagree with you. But I'm off the mic.
Come on.
No, Chair, I think we accept that we will be receiving the information as the Chair is being engaged. Thank you, Chair.
Department, you're still on the floor?
I think the second question was, Honorable Cook are saying it doesn't see Mpumalanga. Yes, it's true, Mpumalanga and Northern Cape. Yes, and Free State are not there yet. In terms of the targets that we're going to put it, because the challenge that we also have is if you go and encourage people to apply, otherwise they transfer it to you, it becomes your problem now. If you don't approve, they blame you, that you, in the first place, you asked us to apply. Because what we did when we started this program, it was popularized. We visited provinces, we informed the provincial departments, and some they did take this opportunity up, others did not. So it's always a challenge in terms of us being proactive and also trying to ensure that there is fair distribution across provinces. But we started, for example, with Northern Cape interacting with the provincial Department of Economic Development together with the Department of Tourism, because we also identified that there we are really not performing that well in terms of the investments that we are making, even on the other incentives. So that's the initiative that we've started as a department, to engage intensely with the provinces so that we can get them to support these entities to apply and get funding from the department. So as the EIP is also moving to CEDA, for example, these are the performance targets that we'll be putting to the entities, that specific areas should get more support rather than I think, giving funding to the same entities. Did you?
I thought I must just add that in this briefing we were asked to report on the incubators being managed by the department. So it did not give any information on the incubators being managed by CEDA. But somewhere in one of the first slides, we say that there are about 129 incubators, of which 80, I mean, we are 17, and the rest of the 80, which is, is CEDA incubators. And some of those are in the Northern Cape and in the Free State, etc. With this, it's a pilot, and we were saying, for us, the emphasis was, one of the things that cooperatives and SMEs are talking about is market access. How do we create an environment for businesses that have something to offer for them to access a particular market, almost an accelerator in a way? But we could provide, Chair, the information of, in addition to what Linda was saying. We think that what this pilot has said to us, it's important to have that, an incubator that focuses on that in that area. And maybe at the same time, I must answer Honorable Sava's question about if the other incubators are funded by CEDA's technology program. The technology in this case doesn't mean information technology. It means almost technical support, because some of those are in the ICT sector. Some of them, there are two of them that are in the jewelry sector. It's beneficiation, right? And in construction, in all sectors. It covers all sectors and some very, very exciting ones. We're going to be launching next week a youth incubator. You know, so it's very, very diverse. Do you want to say more on that?
Honorable Kruger?
So, DG Boy, Question is then, the list that you sent to the secretary of the incubator, will that now include CEDA or not? So can somebody send us then those of that's managed by CEDA as well, please? Thank you.
Certainly
you
can send that
check. Colin Taba? No, Chair. I think in hearing that the request was perhaps the department should report on what it is managing, well, we hear of that, but moving further in a manner in which you explain with very long sentences with Lindo, I think the short answer should say, yes, you are going to Free State, you are going to Mpumalanga, because the long explanations don't give results. I mean, you must zoom in, you must move.
Thank you. Continue, please, the department.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. The Honourable Moshe asked about whether is there a set time for graduation. Normally, it's 3 years. The incubation period is 3 years. And then the second question was on the how are these approvals determined? On page 11, we're talking about one where I think Africa Excel Advisory. They got 5 million, but 14 cooperatives are being supported by the other one. They get more money, but less cooperatives. It's dependent on the application. When a person comes and applies, say, I need money for this and this and that, and then it's based on the things that are presented to us as a department, and then we give money for those activities that are fundable by the department. So we don't determine in terms of the number vis-a-vis the approval or the amount that we can approve. So it's not related. It's the needs that are presented to us that determine the amount. And then I think there was a question from Honorable Kaba on the network facilitators, the relationship between the department and the network facilitators. These are independent contractors. By that we mean they don't have a contractual relationship with us. For example, they cannot come and claim that this year you owe me so much. So they submit applications to us and they get paid on performance. If the application is approved, they get money. So we don't have a legal contract, but what was done was to make sure that we get genuine people that can be vetted. That's why there was that process of application. People were asked to apply, they were vetted, they were scrutinized, so that we get genuine people who are supporting SMEs, and we are able, that's why we are able to blacklist them, because it's people we know who are, we have information, we know where they are, we know what they do, we know what their capacities are, so it makes it easier for us, but there is no legal contract where they can come and claim from us and say, you owe me so much. That's why you are saying there is no relationship in the sense of employer and employee or service provider relationship, but they are credible people that have been scrutinized.
It's my turn now. I'm going to begin with a question that was raised on the area of by successful business. Should a CIS be converted to allow it to buy successful businesses? It is the approach was largely really to create new businesses. That was the bulk, and then also to support existing businesses. The issue of outright buy of an existing business was never built in as a method within the CIS. it was more to support existing businesses to grow them, or to support startups that wants to get into the market. The issue of buying existing businesses, we used to leave it as the mandate of NEF, as the mandate of the National Empowerment Fund, because it operates within that space of equity and then buying of those entities. But I think it's something that we can consider it if it is being proposed that we must look into it, but that's not the aim of the instrument. Training, we didn't, the only thing that we incentivize with this instrument is management, because we have realized that there is a capacity that is lacking on management within the primary cooperatives and even also at the level of the clusters. So we have incentivized for the management to have educated and managed people and pay them, but we don't pay out of this fund for training. There are other instruments in the department that deals with training separately, where we are engaging with DGRB to provide training, and then we're engaging with CETAS to provide training. It could be in a technical training or financial management training or other forms of training. We engage those particular players in the area of training. This one is primarily on funding, and then we also incentivize only the management aspect, and then also we've incentivized also the issue of a 12-month payment of the stipend. That's all. That is the element, and then the rest is the fixed capital investment that we talked about, as well as also the working capital in general. Those are the issues that are covered by the instrument. And then on the issue of the amount, reducing the transactions as numbers, we're saying yes, indeed, you are correct that the numbers are going to come down, because you will recall we used to fund up to 350. Now we're going to be funding to a ceiling of 1.5 million. And the members will recall that when we were visiting KZN, it became clear that most of those 12 abalimi could not be funded because our instruments are very limited. It is through those learnings that we're able, therefore, to improve the amount to the level of 1.5 million so that we can cover them fully and make sure that there are no limitation in covering those cooperatives. I want to address this issue of the informal business, Chair, that you raise. Within the CIS, where informal businesses wants to, therefore, agglomerate around the primary cooperatives, either to purchase stocks or either to be able to market their material collectively, they can establish that as informal businesses under a primary cooperative. We will definitely fund them within the primary cooperatives in that particular regard. But they must organize themselves under the jurisdiction person, which is a primary cooperative. Then we are able to fund them, because they will be operating on economies of scale, on economies of scope within a particular area. Let me just make an example. In a municipality where they want to buy stock and they want to get a truck to be able to buy them collectively and get that particular fixed investment, and they organize themselves under a primary cooperative, they get supported in that regard. Therefore, this instrument does play a role in assisting the informal sector, but they must be able to organize themselves within the primary cooperatives. That's how it gets done. And then on the other two items, three areas that have been raised, service providers, no, there are no fees for service providers. Why? Let me make an example. If a cooperative wants a van to move its, or a tractor, we go to a company that is a retail company that sells tractors. We get the fixed price, 250,000, 150,000. We pay that, and then it gets delivered. Maybe it can have some inbuilt cost of delivery, only that gets delivered to a cooperative. Therefore, the entire amount was to support cooperatives. There are no management fees, there are no services fees that are provided to that service provider. Therefore, in that regard, it's unlike the other ones where you have network facilitators. There are no network facilitators on us. We're paying directly the service provider as per the purchase that we've made. So all money goes to cooperatives in that regard. In terms of cluster, the question that has been asked on cluster, how do they grow? And cluster comes in different forms. They could come where they are producing tomatoes, for example. They want to cluster together to transport their goods, because if they transport it individually, they become problematic. The margins and the cost of that becomes heavy on the business. Then instead of transporting them as a logistical arrangement, they can cluster together producing tomato to access the market. And then in that way, we will be able to fund that business on a cluster basis. Sometimes they want to do value addition within the cluster of tomato. They say, we're going to convert our tomatoes to make tomato sauce, for example. We'll be able to fund them to be able to convert their tomatoes into a production plant where they are providing value addition. It works in that particular format. In some instances, it could even be shared services. Those shared services that they get provided will be able to finance and assist them to have shared services, so that therefore the cost of those shared services are reduced to the cooperatives. They could produce similar things, or it could be a value chain issue that we're developing, that we're supporting them so that they can grow their businesses. It is that particular format, that particular methodology and the approach that is being used. I agree that is the 11 projects that are in process will provide those details. But we want to say that those things are in due process legally. You know, those details need to be kept in a matter that are not revealed, because they are going to be going before courts. But we can provide details as to these are the case numbers of these cases. And then finish it to the committee members. I thank you. I think those are the issues for me. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, the only other ones I see here were the ones raised by Honourable Kaba about you have performed reported on the non-performing incubators. We are the shining projects that we can show the presence. I think in that pack that we sent to the chairperson, there's actually a presentation on the EIPs, on each of them and their performance. So among that is, for example, the Umvula. That's another success story. It's one which I visited, a township-based initiative. Nwaneri is also very interesting. It's in the agriculture sector. In fact, we're visiting that cooperative, and there was a question, here was a cooperative that we funded through EIP because it is a cooperative of about 16 or 18 emerging farmers and one commercial farmer, and they needed administrative premises to be able to do their work. So we funded for the office manager, etc., and they just started. They are doing their first harvesting of tomatoes and one, so we were excited about this, where they've got their box, you know, the tomatoes comes in, and we'll be happy to know, chairperson, part of the branding on it is small business development, which is the supermarket. You look out for that one. So not a ZZ too. I think that we've answered all of the questions, Chair, and maybe just to close with appreciating the questions, and because it just enables us to be clear about how we do our work and focus and report going further.
Thank you very much. But before I complete the thinking, let me take one other chance.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to pick up on one point made by both the DG and the acting DDG.
No, it's not the DG.
Oh, okay.
You said not DG. appointment on the 20th. Cabinet appointed to confirm Lindor's appointment on the 23rd. Of yes. April.
Oh, well, I apologize. Congratulations, Linda, on your appointment. Yes. The point about the crowding in and the crowding out, and I think you're 100% right. And in fact, you took the bait, in a sense, because crowding in is what this should be all about, not crowding out. Actually, de-risking the private sector. That's what the state should be doing. And I would suggest, Chair, that this is an area that the Department needs to pay a lot more attention to across all its functions and agencies, is de-risking entrepreneurship, incentivizing entrepreneurship. Because we need more businesses starting, we need more businesses to survive, we need more businesses to grow. If we fix those three things, then we're fine as a country. But we're not. We don't have enough startups. Too many of them are failing too soon, and not enough of them are growing. So, you know, I just think that more time, more of your time should be spent engaging with and developing the ecosystem at a leadership level. You know, you can't compete with 20 billion or 30 billion, whatever it is, but you can lead it. You can devise mechanisms for, you know, providing the type of drive and determination and leadership to say we're going to fix this problem as a country, because that's what this department should be doing. So, yeah, I want to just pick up on that point, Chair, and, you know, I think most members of this committee would be happy if we were to see that leadership provided and show that you are collaborating with the private sector and not so much not competing with it, but just working in a silo, all of your own. Thank you.
Let me thank members of the Portfolio Committee, and also thank the DG and the team, as well as the board leadership. CEO, we thank you very much, as well as I had the name somewhere, but I missed the name of the gentleman across there. And the lady. Okay. Also thanking you for attending. We really do appreciate. We take it that some of the engagement that came out of here will inform you as you go on with your work, because that's what we want, that there must be fruits out of the engagement. And don't give up on the poor and the poorest, because if you give up on those, you will have missed the very intention of the establishment of this department. So all the time you must say, how do we pull them in? How do we pull them in? It must become a worrying question. Don't be comfortable where you find you are saving those that are already running. It's all right if you happen to save them, but not at the expense of the poorest of the poor. With those words, let's adjourn the meeting, and thank you very much. Babu Kunene, is that lunch set?
Yes.
The secretary says lunch is set.